Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, my true crime darling angels, to Web Sleuth Radio. I'm so glad you're with us tonight. We have an incredible show in store for you. But first, can you believe it? It was 24 years ago today that Polly Klass was stolen out of her bedroom. She was having a slumber party, and guess what? They didn't lock a window. How many of us have done that 800 million times? And Polly and her two girlfriends were in her bedroom this day 24 years ago, and that is when the monster, we do not mention his name, came, took her, and get this, when they called the police to say, oh, he tied up the two girls and then took Polly. When they called the police to say there was been a kidnapping, the police didn't want it out there. They didn't want to panic anybody. So they turned to some special channel so no other police units could hear it. Can you believe this? And get this. The monster is driving a car. Polly's in the back in the trunk with her mouth taped, more than likely. He gets stuck in a ditch, and they come help him out. Yeah, Polly was in the truck and the trunk. It is amazing. It was, I believe, a little over 2 months before they found Polly's remains, and they did arrest the monster. He does sit on death row. But think about it. Can you imagine that today? The police saying, oh, hush. Yes, this man came into these girls' bedroom. They were, what, 12, 13, tied up two of them, took Molly, but or Polly, but we want to keep this quiet. That's how much things have changed, and a big part of that change is because of Polly's dad, Mark Klass. Mark Klass and the Klass Kids Foundation, they've worked tirelessly to try and stop the monsters from coming to get our children. They also have a very dedicated search team that a lot of people don't know about, and they search constantly for young girls who have been put into human trafficking, runaways that have become prostitutes. The things that the Klass Kids Foundation actually, the things they do would amaze you. A lot of the times, it's a Klass Kids print-a-thon where they have the kids come for free to a location. They print them, give the parents a DNA kit, and give them safety tips. Polly Klass's dad, Mark, has dedicated his life to making sure it never happens to another child again, because it is beyond a nightmare. So on this very sad anniversary, I want to let Mark Klass know and everybody at the Klass Kids Foundation know that we, meaning myself and Web Sleuth, stand behind you, and whatever you need, you say the word, and we are right there. We will help you fight those monsters. Speaking of monsters, we're going to take on another monster here, one we don't know the identity of yet. I'm talking about the man who killed Abby Williams and Libby German in Delphi, Indiana, on February 13th of this year. And joining us to help us sort out these latest developments, including a very interesting new suspect, is a retired detective, Christine Menina. Christine, thank you so much for joining us.
Absolutely, and thank you for having me on the show.
Let me ask you, is that the correct title, retired detective, or are you still an active detective?
I'm no longer a detective, but I'm an active officer.
Active officer. Okay, we'll call you officer. There we go. And I'm just going to give a quick review of this case, Christine, and you have a lot of experience in the Indianapolis Police Department. I'm going to give a little bit of a background on you so everybody will know that we're talking to the real deal here. Christine knows her stuff. Now, you might have seen Christine, more than likely you've seen her, on the investigation show The Shift. It's been aired for 3 seasons on Investigation Discovery. That's like our religious channel for those of us in true crime. Also, Christine's been on Real Detective and featured in the docu-reality show Women and the Badge on Oxygen. Now, Christine Menina has over 21 years of law enforcement experience and 9 years as one of the most successful homicide detectives in the Indianapolis Metropolitan Police Department. Ms. Menina is currently director of the Police Department's Explorer Program, and she has this fantastic podcast called The Menina Files, and we'll get into that a little bit at the end of the show. Christine Menina, Officer Menina, thank you for joining us today.
Yes, I'm happy to be here and try to spread some information on this another monster.
Yeah, another monster, that's right. Now, let's clear things up first. You don't have any necessarily inside information just because you work in the department. You're not privy to what really is going on, but what you have is your experience, so you can give us that. You can give us an idea of what you think might be going on. Is that a correct assumption?
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. I have not worked any part of this investigation, but I've been following it a little bit, and I absolutely can give you some of my experience and my opinions on where they're at on this case.
Wonderful. Okay, let's go through the case just a little bit here. Let's take everyone back to February 13th of this year. Abby and Libby, two longtime friends, one 13, the other 14, decide to go for a walk like they probably did a million times in Delphi, Indiana. The next day, they were discovered murdered. Now, we have a picture of the suspect. We have the suspect's voice, we assume, and a great sketch of the suspect. What do you think is taking so long for the police to catch this person? They have so much, Officer Menina, so much.
Well, you know, that's a good question. I think that, you know, they did such a fantastic job of getting, you know, the picture of the suspect and getting some audio. I mean, it's unbelievable that Libby was able to, you know, just have the sense to do that. You know, I'm sure she sensed something was wrong, and she was able to get her camera out. You know, it's interesting that the more I've read about Libby, you know, she was very into taking pictures and you know, using her cell phone like most kids are today. And I think it's amazing mm-hmm. that she was able to, you know, use that. But with that being said, I think that they do have a lot more information than what they're probably telling us. I think they probably have a lot more audio than what's been out there. And I think that they, you know, they do have some DNA evidence. And I think with this type of investigation that rocked this small town in Indiana, where you could literally go to sleep with your doors unlocked and nothing like this has happened up there, that, you know, it's a huge, huge case. And I think they're trying to do everything correctly and not try to get ahead of themselves and build the strongest case that they possibly can.
And Officer Menina, what we're going to do is we're basically going through the steps again. So if you've heard this before, my friends, bear with us. We just want to get everything out there again one more time. I'm going to play the audio that they have. It's in a loop for about 6 seconds. You're going to have to turn up your speakers to hear it. But this is what the girls were able to record. And probably, like you said, a lot more recording. And I just shudder to think what else they have on that phone recording, but here we go.
Downhill.
I'm gonna play it one more time.
Downhill.
And I'm sorry, that was Libby who recorded it, is that correct?
Yes, that is correct, and it's chilling to hear that. It's chilling.
It is, because you know what is going to happen now. And like you said, for her to have that kind of common sense to hit the record button, to take a picture, that I don't know if adults could think that quickly. But it is
right.
Very, very chilling, and I can't even imagine what the parents are going through. So they have all of this stuff, and they can't find the guy. Now, that could lead to another clue. The fact is, maybe he is a transient. We have to talk about this guy that everybody is just over the moon about. Daniel Nations, 31, convicted sex offender, was in Delphi at the time of the crime. And according to the website Crime Online, spent time under bridges while he was there. And he was, well, you tell us. Tell us how he was caught, his whole deal, whatever you know about Daniel Nations, 31, and why everybody's so excited about him.
Well, I think that, you know, when this first came out, he's obviously has links to Indiana. He's been arrested in five different counties here in Indiana. You know, if they've been interviewing people that have worked with him or people that he's worked for, and, you know, he's got quite a temper. There was some talk about possibly when he was fired from one job, he chopped up some pigs, and that kind of brings up the whole hatchet thing. And then he's got an expired Indiana plate where he stopped in Colorado after making threats to some, you know, hikers or whatever that was on the trail. So, I mean, any time that you know, just the Indiana plate alone, you know, gets everybody excited. So he's got Indiana ties. You know, it's interesting. So they were killed on the 13th, and then on February 14th, he goes and checks in with his probation officer about 102 miles south of where Delphi was. So there's talk of, you know, did he do that intentionally for his alibi, you know, if this is the guy. And so, yeah, I think that, you know, it's very exciting, but the investigators, I think, are just trying to stay in control and make sure they get all of the information. But he definitely has to be looked at, and he has to be looked at hard.
And I believe that's what they're doing this weekend, if I'm not mistaken. We're talking with Officer Christine Menina, and we're talking about the Abby and Libby, the murders of those two beautiful girls back on February 13th. The whole nation has been talking about this murder. There is a person of interest, maybe even a suspect, Daniel Nations, 31. Didn't he forget to check in with his parole officer as well? And that's one of the reasons why, you know, after February 14th, nobody ever heard from him again. And
nobody heard
you know,
from him.
Right, and so you're thinking
nobody heard
that
from him, and he was off the run.
That adds the whole vision of him maybe trying to escape. It just adds to the story of perhaps he is the suspect, maybe he did do it. But when I first looked at the picture, I didn't see it. I just didn't see it. A lot thinner, but again, back in February, maybe he was a lot fatter. I don't really see the resemblance. I would assume if he is the man, they should be able to find out fairly quickly. Do you agree?
Well, yeah. I mean, if they have said that there's DNA evidence. Obviously they're going to tape record the interview with him, so there'll be a voice comparison. They should be able to figure out that pretty quick. Now, I don't know specifically what kind of DNA evidence they have, but they've got some. So I would imagine that this could get wrapped up quickly to see if this is him or not.
And it does look very, very promising. This is, to me, the first, I'm going to call him a suspect, you know, person of interest. Okay, let's just forget that. Everyone thinks he did it. He looks good on paper, as they say. Sex offender, violent temper, was in town. If it's true that he was sleeping or staying under bridges, maybe he was around the bridge that Abby and Libby walked across. Do we know what his sex offender crime was? Do we know what he did?
He exposed himself in a Walmart parking lot, I think somewhere in like Georgia. That was what he is exposing himself. And then he also has a prior for domestic violence and driving while suspended. But as far as the sexual offender one, it was he exposed himself in the parking lot in a South Carolina Walmart, I believe.
Can we just change topics for a moment? Because I have never been able to understand this. I've been exposed to, if you will, by somebody, same thing, masturbating in public in a public lobby. I know you're not a psychologist, but just based on your experience as a police officer, what the hell? What is the deal? I mean, how do they get like this where they think this is the way to be sexually active, I guess? Do you have any insight on why people do this in public?
Well, based on my experience, I mean, that's what excites them. I think in this situation where he was in South Carolina, he was exposing himself, and he saw a little girl and asked her if she wanted to come take a ride. So obviously it gets him excited, and it gets him all riled up, and that's why they do it. And they probably
abused
themselves.
Exactly. I think they've been abused themselves. Like, I'm just wondering the leap from, you know, normal teenage sex to adults exposing themselves, and men is who I'm talking about. Something happened to them. Something happened that their brain was rewired, and this is who they are now. And as Dr. Filova says, when somebody shows you who they are, believe them. Or was that Oprah? I can't remember. Anyway, as far as sex offender rehabilitation, my soapbox, apologize. I'll get back to the topic later. I don't really see that happening. Not at this point anyway, unless we develop something completely different to treat sex offenders. Okay, let's get back to the Abby and Libby case and Daniel Nations, 31. Like I said, good on paper. Perfect suspect on paper. And I saw a thing on YouTube where they started to blend the faces. And Officer Menina, I don't know if you've seen that yet, but as the faces get closer and closer blended, it does look like it's very close. It's just his face and the sketch is a little sadder. Now, me looking at it directly on, it's I can see how they could be two totally different people. I can also see how it could be a match. But have you seen that? Have you seen that on the internet where they try and put the two faces together and how they end up being almost exactly alike?
No, I have not seen that, but I will definitely check that out.
Yeah, it's just, it's all over YouTube. It's pretty fascinating. Again, with a situation like that, you don't know if the video has been manipulated or not, but it's certainly a very interesting to look at. Okay, so now, the detectives from Indiana are, I believe they're in Colorado, if I'm not mistaken, and they're talking to this Daniel Nations. I believe they've been talking to him all weekend. As a police officer, if this was your case, tell us the first question you would ask and how you'd go about interviewing this potential suspect in Abby and Libby's murder.
Well, I was under the impression that he was stopped with his wife, and that's who I would jump on first before I even went in and talked to him. My approach with her, they've got a child, and my approach was with her would be, look, you know, we got to get to the bottom of this, and you need to cooperate, or, you know, I'm going to take your child away from you. This is probably the approach that I would take and see, gather as much information as you can from her, and then go from there. Based on the information that I would get from her, and hopefully it would be good by, you know, doing the whole child angle with her. You know, you got to look at the weaknesses, you know, and see what he's about. So I would spend a long, long time learning as much as I can about him from her before I went in and attacked him with interview. With that being said, you know, I think that it would be, I would try to get a rapport. I think I would try to hold my emotions in check and interview, and keep him talking. That's one of the things that, you know, has most intrigued me in my career as a homicide detective is interviewing people, because believe it or not, at the end of the day, people do want to tell their story. And it's our job as investigators to go in there and speak to these suspects with as much information as we possibly can, and then figure out how to get inside of their brain and get them to start talking, because it's very, very difficult to continue to keep lying. You've got to remember your lies, and I just believe that this type of person that's done the crimes that he's done in the past, I just think that if you can figure out a way to get in and keep him talking, that eventually, and it may take a long time, and that's fine. I mean, I've been through 10- and 12-hour interviews with people, but people want to tell their story and what they've done, believe it or not. So that would be I would try to get a rapport and just, you know, I base a lot of my interviews on what the kind of information that I'm getting. And if we need to tighten it up a little bit and pressure it, then we can do that. But it's really kind of based on what he's giving me, how he's giving it to me, if I'm building that rapport with him.
Mm-hmm. So you start with his wife, and we know this guy already has a temper. So I think it's safe to assume that at the very least he's verbally abusive, if not physically abusive. So she's already, again, assuming a broken woman. How long do you think, and this is a horrible question to ask, but I'm going to ask it anyway, somebody like that, broken, abused, you offer her friendship, love, comfort, how soon before they start breaking down? Or do they still have that protective mode, protect their man at no cost whatsoever?
Well, I think she would probably protect, and that's why I would bring in the child angle. And because I think at the end of the day, a mother will always protect their children. And if they have to choose between their man and their child, you know, they'll choose their child. So I would play that angle huge with her and say, look, we've got to get to the bottom of this. You don't want any part of this. And I would try to throw her in the trick bag as well if I needed to put the heat up and the pressure, but, you know, I would try to empower her and say, look, you know, this isn't the type of life that you probably signed up for or that you want anymore, and now we're looking at some serious, serious things, and you have a child that you need to protect, and it doesn't appear that you're in good hands with this gentleman, and just try to empower her and show her another angle and another, you know, aspect to a possible life for her.
Let's say they go in there and can't find anything out. DNA comes back. It's not him. What do the detectives do now?
Well, I think they probably go have a beer. I think that interview is going to be helpful anyway, because obviously, you know, he's a suspect out in the Colorado thing. So, you know, they'll confer with their detectives and there, and if he stays in the area, they'll keep, you know, track of him. And then I think they come back here and they just keep working it. I mean, you know, tips are coming in every day, and they just you have to be relentless, and they have been, and just keep working it. But at this point in time, I would be real excited about Mr. Nations at this point. But, you know, if it all failed and the DNA and all that stuff didn't match, then you just come back and you just keep working.
But what a disappointment. I mean, after all this time, here you have the perfect suspect on paper, and it's not him. I don't, like you said, you keep working on, and the tips. I can imagine the tips coming in just must be so time-consuming. And obviously, most of them are no good. Isn't that just beyond frustration? How do you not throw in the towel?
Well, I think all of these detectives and people that have volunteered, you know, they have a vested interest at this point with Libby and Abby and their families. And, you know, you take one glance at these kids' pictures, and that would keep me up all night, you know, trying to work. So I think, you know, I'm these detectives. They have families and children. And I don't think that there'll be a loss of motivation no matter how much frustration is at hand.
Well, that's good to hear. So do you have any idea if they are still interviewing this person or if it's over and they're back at the station? I know you don't have any inside scoop, but maybe you have just a teeny bit.
Well, I do not know that if they're still investigating or if they're still in Colorado. My gut would tell me that they're still there, that they're spending a lot of time, interviewing the girlfriend or the wife and maybe even the child, you don't know, and interviewing anybody that has been near Daniel, you know, while he's been in Colorado and just really, so I would imagine they'd stay, you know, a few days and hopefully they can rush this DNA through. So I would imagine they'd stay and hang out and keep working it until they get the results of the DNA.
We're talking with Officer Christine Manina, and we're talking about that case out of Delphi, Indiana, that grabbed everybody's hearts. Abby and Libby went for a walk with just both friends, hanging out right after school on the 13th of February, and the next day they were found murdered. Everybody has been going crazy trying to figure out who this person is. Like we said in the beginning, we have a very good sketch. We have a picture, and we have audio. It's difficult to understand why this person has not been caught, but, Officer Manina, I've always said this guy's a transient. That's the only explanation. If he was anybody that was in town or even around the outskirts of town or even in another city where he was settled, don't you think they would have caught him by now? It's apparently, to me, fairly obvious that it has to be a transient. Right or wrong, do you think?
Yeah, no, I agree. And that was my first initial thought when he wasn't caught within, you know, a few hours of them finding the bodies and then getting the picture out. So, I do believe he's probably a transit. There's also, I've always felt at some point that there may be, you know, some type of internet connection. I don't know if Libby and Abby thought maybe they were talking to a younger person and got there and you know, saw that it was him. That was another kind of gut feeling that I had from the beginning, like how the heck did this guy end up on a bridge at the same time as these young ladies. So I haven't ruled that out, and I don't know if that's just some information that they're keeping, you know, close to the vest, or that didn't happen. But I really believed, you know, for a while that you know, Instagram, any of those things where they're talking to people online and, hey, let's meet, and they may have thought, you know, it could have been a boy. I mean, they were teenage girls. They may have thought they were
right.
talking to a young boy and all excited, and they get there and they see him and they're like, yikes, you know, and then it went
mm-hmm.
and then it went bad. But so I think that you're right. You know, there's a definite huge chance that he's a transient. And then I think there's also the
mm-hmm.
the internet connection.
That's a very good point, especially in this day and age. You can see them, like you said, chatting it up with a guy and going to meet him, and that's a very good scenario. They meet him. He's this older, creepy guy, and they start walking away, and he starts following them. And they
yeah.
start, you know, taking pictures and leaving the recording on. Again, just to go there and think about that, it just flips my stomach. It really does. I just pray that this is the man. Okay, so they're in the Indianapolis police are probably more than likely still in Colorado interviewing Daniel Nations, 31. He is the person of interest, snicker, snicker, wink, wink, basically the suspect, and looks good on paper. We're just going to have to wait and see. As people on Web Sleuth discuss this case and we get more and more frustrated, we kind of take out our frustrations on each other. We start arguing with each other and everything, and we shouldn't, but it's just kind of common. It's just nature when you keep talking about the same thing over and over. But this has really brought about a new rush of involvement and participation on Web Sleuth, which I'm glad for. This leading up to a question that you may not know the answer to. Do you know if the Indianapolis Police Department has ever come to Web Sleuth to read or to look at things? Because I see a lot of police departments on our site because of their IP address. And I'm wondering if you think the Indianapolis Police Department has ever done anything like that, or have you ever done anything like that? Turn to social media just to see what people are saying.
Well, I have turned to social media. I don't have any idea if anyone has gone to Web Sleuth or not, but yeah, social media, absolutely. I mean, they're all about, you know, putting their whole life on Facebook and everything else. And I have found many suspects taking pictures of their guns and money, and I've gotten through, you know, information through that way, and they love to talk. So yeah, social media is huge. I mean, it's another tool that we use, and it's amazing what people will put on there. It's absolutely amazing.
It is true. People put stuff on Facebook, and they can't believe that somebody found them out. But here's the deal. You put something on Facebook, then somebody answers it, and you check on that somebody, and that person's related to somebody else, and you just go down the line, and pretty soon you have a whole timeline of a person, and they're like, how did that happen? So, again, I really have always told people, watch out for social media because it can really turn around and bite you without you even realizing it. I'm not talking about doing anything illegal. I'm just talking about in general in life, be very careful. But on Web Sleuth, with everybody discussing the case, I have seen a lot of police departments. I have not seen the Indianapolis Police Department, but that doesn't mean they're not there. We do get police departments from all over the world looking. So it's good to know that the police are turning to social media, Facebook. Hopefully they're coming to Web Sleuth because, again, it's just like a bunch of people sitting in a room throwing out ideas, and then a good idea might come up that they haven't thought of before, and that's kind of our goal and our hope. Are there any final comments you'd like to make about Abby and Libby's case and this new suspect before we move on?
Well, I think, you know, I think eventually it's going to get solved, and you just want the nightmare to be over for these parents and grandparents and all the people that have been affected. I have a lot of confidence in these investigators. They've worked relentless. So, you know, I think, you know, Web Sleuth will be great. Keep the comments coming. If you think of anything, I mean, there's a tip line, but I think you can, you know, if you guys come up with something, you know, you can always call and give,
mm-hmm.
you know, your 2 cents. Never know. I think when, as detectives, when we're ingrained in something like this, you know, sometimes you know, it's hard to see other ideas, or you get very police oriented and you don't go outside of the box. And I think it's important
mm-hmm.
that, you know, as investigators that you go outside the box, because I think there's some valuable information. I mean, we're information gatherers. I mean, that's what we do. So, you know, hopefully they'll continue to do that. But I do think it'll get solved.
I do too. I hope this is the guy. I'm just not sure, because to me, it's the faces don't match up quite right. But again, Could be a weight thing. I don't know. Let's move on, because you do a lot of incredible and interesting things with your life. You also do a podcast called The Menino Files, and it's a podcast on crime, to true crime. And you have a lot of experience, 9 years a detective. Right now, you're doing amazing work. You are in charge of the Explorer program in the Indianapolis Metropolitan Police Department. But tell us about your podcast first, and then we'll go to the Explorer program.
Yeah, so the Menino Files is a, you know, it's just all of my cases that I've investigated over 22 years, and I have over 700 cases. I started out as a domestic violence detective and then went into homicide, then went into robbery and aggravated assault. So I've spent a better part of my career investigating cases. So that's what we're doing. We're going back and we're talking about the cases, and we're talking about, you know, where people are now and how these types of things have affected them, and, trying to just, go through it and give people kind of an inside look of what it's like to investigate these cases and follow them through from the beginning to the end.
Tell us about your most interesting case, perhaps most bizarre case, if you had to pick one.
Man, I've had so many, and I'm asked that a lot, but I think probably the case that was personally the one that probably affected me most was the episode that was shown on Real Detective, where I mm-hmm. investigated a homicide where a gentleman and another guy were shot, one died, and I was working with cooperative witnesses, and I was able to make an arrest, and then the suspect, while he was in jail, was able to get his cousin through kind of secret jail phone calls to go and kill both my witnesses. So that was just a difficult, difficult case. I really liked these witnesses. They were cooperative and they wanted to do right. And it was just a horrible ending all the way around.
Tell us a little bit about the case, if you can. Was it drugs involved, or what was all involved?
It's interesting because it was involving drugs, but it was kind of a neighborhood battle. So the suspect was coming into the area, and he was selling some bad dope. And mm-hmm. he sold some bad dope to the witness's mother, and she overdosed and died. And so he confronted him and just said, "Hey, can you move that shit over to the next street? Keep mm-hmm. it out of here." And they got into kind of a verbal altercation, and my witness hit him. And then a few hours later, the suspect came back and shot my witness through the door, hitting him in the leg. And so that started the first case. So another detective mm-hmm. received that case because he survived and knew who the suspect was, and there was a warrant out for him. And the night of the murders, my witness was at home with his girlfriend, and a couple people came over, and the suspect was kind of across the street doing surveillance on the house, saw a couple people leave and go sit in a vehicle, and he thought it was the guy that he shot in the leg, and he went over mm-hmm. to finish it off, and he ended up shooting the wrong person, and the witness that was shot in the leg and his girlfriend witnessed that one. So then that's when I come into it and take the homicide, and then I kind of learned the whole backstory of it, and they were, of course, upset because, the suspect hadn't been picked up on the original warrant. They had been calling the police mm-hmm. throughout the day, saying he's driving by, he's making threats, and this guy was just crazy. So that started the investigation, and they were cooperative and both identified the suspect, and it took me a few days to get him round up and get him arrested. And then while mm-hmm. he was in jail, and those jail phone calls are recorded, and so everything was in code. So it took me and three or four other detectives an ungodly amount of hours to decipher what happened, but he was able to get his cousin to go in and shoot both of my witnesses. And I had told these witnesses, I said, "Hey, even though he's locked up, I just feel like it's kind of hot. I said, if you could move to the, west side of the city for a while, it would just make me feel a little mm-hmm. bit better." And they agreed. And when I arrived on the scene with both of their bodies. They had had a suitcase by the door and were leaving to go the next morning to another part of the city. So it was just a horrible, horrible case.
And that's why people don't cooperate right there, because they're afraid for their lives. So I'm assuming this guy was convicted. Is he on death row? I don't know if Indianapolis has the death penalty or not.
We do have death row. He's not on death row, but he's convicted now. It was difficult in my case because I didn't have any living witnesses, and they would not allow the first 911 call that was made by one of the witnesses because she was deceased. But we were able to convince the jury that there would be no way in hell that these witnesses could be there, that we did have witnesses, but they couldn't be there. They were able to convict him on that. And then we caught up with the three cousins that killed my witnesses, and they're all locked up. And then the original guy, we got him, you know, for conspiracy to commit murder. So he's gone for the rest of his life.
Oh, good, good. But I want to make sure I didn't mishear what you were saying. You couldn't say that they were murdered? You just could say they couldn't be there? Or could you tell them they were murdered?
Yeah, we could not say in the original trial that that the witnesses were murdered. And we wanted to put the original 911 tape in, but they wouldn't allow it because she was deceased. But we couldn't tell the jurors that they were dead.
That's just ridiculous, because then he won. You know, I mean, he got what he wanted.
Win,
they can't, you can't.
So it was tricky. When I got on the stand, you know, I got a couple warnings of contempt in court because I was pushing the envelope to try to get at jury that something bad happened, you know, to these witnesses, you know, and it ended up working, so.
That's just ridiculous. I mean, you should be able to say that the manner of death, homicide, and, oh, well, it gives them something bad for the jurors to look to feel about them. Oh, well. I mean, I can't even talk. I'm just baffled by that. That's just ridiculous. But it is what it is, I guess, and you do your best to work around it. Okay, that's one case. Do you have another case that you perhaps tell people who are thinking about going in to become a police officer, perhaps a case to kind of give them an idea of what wild and crazy things they can expect?
Well, I think that you need to expect anything and everything to happen as a police officer, especially in this day and age. I mean, part of the Menina Files is specials that we'll do that are just called street stories, because really I find the street stories a lot more interesting than the homicide cases. Just what can happen in an 8-hour shift where you're on a burglary and then bam, 2 seconds later you're in a pursuit, and then an hour later you're in a fight and you're 3 hours into your shift. So, you know, it's a lot of fun, but it's very, up and down as far as your adrenaline and your emotional level. But, you know, I tell with these young kids that I teach, and these kids are, with the Explorer program, are 12 to 18, and they're all interested in becoming the police. And each week I train them on how to be good police officers and good people and life skills and things. But, you know, it's a scary world right now to be the police. You just never, ever know what's going to happen. And right when you think you've seen everything, all you got to do is go to work the next day.
And then it's totally topped. Let's talk about the Explorer program. I find this very interesting. I think a lot of other people will too as well. You are the head of the Explorer program at the Indianapolis Metropolitan Police Department, and that is quite a big job, because I would imagine there are a lot of, what did you say the age groups were, up to 18 and down to 21?
Down to about 11 to 12 to 18, and these kids are all interested in law enforcement, so they come to the program, and I teach them each week. We meet on Tuesday nights, and I teach them each week. I mean, I've got a great group of kids. These kids are unbelievable, we've got a pretty large group. But, you know, they come each week, and I'll keep them updated on current events. And, you know, I teach them what it's really like out here. They know how to do traffic stops. They know how to handcuff. They know how to do building searches. We show them videos. We have our specialty units come in, K-9, SWAT, whatever, to show them and teach them. We've had our leadership academy come in and teach, you know, morally correct. And I touch a lot on the whole Facebook and you know, Twitter and all those things and Instagram, you know, be careful what they put on there for no other reason than if they put on there something stupid, that when they go to apply to the police department, you know, we'll find it. So, you know,
absolutely.
I think I've got people in there that aren't interested in law enforcement, and I'm fine with that because I really have tried to branch out and just try to get them to be good, upstanding people, and we have a lot of fun. And then on the weekends, throughout the year, we volunteer at different community events where we work closely with the police department. I mean, we're up to 3,000 volunteer hours right now.
Oh, wow.
Based on all the events. We've worked the Indianapolis 500, different events that happen in the city. We'll assist law enforcement. And, you know, these kids are no joke. They love it. And they show up. They absolutely show up, which is our, you know, which is my mantra with them, is to have each other's back and show up. That's the key to life.
Boy, that is the key to life. 11 to 18, that's a pretty wide gap in age. An 11-year-old can really feel like they want to be a cop. An 18-year-old I get, teenagers I get, but isn't it difficult with an 11-year-old? Or am I just being weird?
No, it is, but I think that this program will also, it will. I try to ask them what they are interested in. Like I have a couple kids that want to be, you know, PIOs. So, you know, we work with the local news channel to try to teach them, or any of them want to be attorneys, you know, I try to hook them up.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, 11 to 12, they don't know, but at least they're in a positive program where they've got a lot of support. They've got somewhere to go. They're involved in activities that'll keep them out of the element, because anymore, you know, these kids that, you know, we had a shooting at the mall the other night, so you can't even go to the mall anymore and be safe. So I'm trying to provide a place, you know, to figure out what they want to do, and if they don't want to be the police, that's fine, and you know, they just get a lot, and it's a team building type of thing, so it's a positive thing all the way around.
And I would assume most large police departments have this program, so if you're listening and you're thinking this might be something good for your child, they could, I'm assuming, could just call and find out the details, although every police department is different. Is that how they get into this program, or are they put in here because they've had a problem?
No, most of these kids, no, I haven't. These kids have not been in trouble. A lot of them have had an interest or a family member or some sort, and we go out to schools and we recruit. We go to, you know, little job. We had a job spark this past week where they had 9,000 kids come through the state fairgrounds, and every type of work was represented, fire department, police department, Eli Lilly, it didn't matter. And these kids walked around and, you know, tried to figure out what might spark them, you know, for a career.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we had a bunch of kids come over and sign up. So, you know, I think that you call your local police department and see if they have an Explorer program and get them involved, because it's a great organization. We're associated with the Boy Scouts, so we work closely with them on different things. So, it's just a positive, fun thing, and these kids are unbelievable. I mean, they show up every detail. They're very professional, and the community loves them.
So that gives me hope. We're talking with Officer Christine Menina. She also has a great podcast called The Menina Files. And how can somebody listen to your podcast? When does a new one come on? Is it live? Give us the whole scoop.
Well, so The Menina Files, like I said, is a representation of all of my cases for the past 22 years. They're aired on Mondays and Wednesdays. You can go to iTunes or Google Play. You can also visit my website, www.themeninafiles.com, and download them all there. So there's many, many ways. iTunes.
Many,
Google
many
Play.
Ways. Oh, good deal. Well, I'm sure we can find it, and we'll put a link on WebSleuth as well. Officer Menina, I want you to put on your patrol cap, if you will, because a lot has been made of the police officer pulling over somebody and doing a traffic stop. I've always said, don't be a jerk and you'll be fine. Okay, if you want to argue the ticket, you can go to court. Just don't be a jerk with the officer. Is that right advice? Or now are the police more sensitive and they're being trained in such a way to make sure there are no confrontations when you pull somebody over?
Well, I think that, you know, in this day and age, it's one of the more dangerous things that we do. But personally, you know, if pull you over, You know, I am cool. And if I'm writing you a ticket, then you've done something really bad. Most of the time,
mm-hmm.
if I'm in a position where I have to pull you over and you're cool, you know, you'll get a verbal warning. But, you know, you have in this day and age, everybody's nervous. The person that's been pulled over is nervous because they're getting pulled over. The officer that's pulling them over is nervous because we're getting shot on traffic stops and we don't know who all is in the car. We don't know who's armed. We don't know if there's going to be a confrontation.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if you can just keep the understanding of, you know, keep your hands on the steering wheel, do what the officer says, be cordial, and you know, and stay calm, that everything should
mm-hmm.
should be okay. And that, you know, and
yeah.
remember that the officer is nervous as well. I mean, we don't know who we're pulling over, and we've got a job to do. And I think you're right. You know, there's no reason to be a jerk, you know, if you get pulled over, and there's no reason for an officer to be a jerk for pulling you, you know,
yeah,
for pulling you over and having in talking with you.
Yeah. This does happen. It was a long time ago. I had a police officer pull me over and just yell and yell and yell at me. I was sobbing by the time I was done because I didn't have my sticker on my car because I hadn't paid the taxes on my car because I didn't have the money. And it was winter, and I remember the choice. It was sticker on my car or pay the gas bill, and I paid the gas bill, and I was trying to explain to the officer I was going to have it later. Anyway, he just made me sob. That really is the bad one. I've had so many good encounters with the police department that I'm more than willing to just toss that one. He was an old guy, you know, probably had a rotten life, and just took it out on me for that day. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just laughing. I mean, it shouldn't be that way. I mean,
that's
like emotional about his traffic stop when really it's just business and keep it professional.
Well, I just assumed he had something going on in his life, and it just felt better to yell at me than to deal with whatever was going on. He was quite old. I don't want to use the word elderly because I've never seen an elderly cop, but he was up there, and he just didn't want to hear it, by golly. And I'm sure he's heard a million excuses, but I was telling the truth. Anyway, he gave me a ticket, and I paid it, and life became good again. I didn't have to worry about it. Again, it's such a big political issue right now with the police. Do you have a problem? Do you think the police have a problem with anybody filming them during a traffic stop, even though they more than likely have a body camera on, which is a great idea? But, like, what if you're filming the police officer? Do you think that makes that officer kind of get the hackles on the back of his neck standing up?
I mean, I've never had a problem with it. If you want to film me, go ahead and film me. I mean, I think I just don't have a problem with it. We do not have body cams here because we don't, supposedly we don't have the money for them. I wish we could be outfitted with them. I think it would save, you know, a lot of heartache and headache on both sides of it, even
mm-hmm.
though the body cams, you know, they're very difficult when you're in a foot pursuit or you get into a scuffle. But I think it would save a lot of, you know, heartache on both sides. But, you know, I don't have a problem. I've never had a problem with somebody than me. I don't, you know, I'm not the type of officer that's going to do anything that, you know, I'm going to do what I got to do. And I have no problem. If you want to videotape it and throw it on YouTube, go ahead. Cause I know that I'm not doing anything that's going to come back and bite me. I'm just not the type of officer.
Exactly. And that's how it should be. People will now start videotaping police officers for whatever reason. Like you said, you're doing nothing wrong. Who cares? Don't let it get to you. And people in the cars, just don't be jerks. To me, it's such a simple, simple fix. Put your hands on the wheel. Don't be a jerk. And show them your identification and move on your merry way. I don't know. To me, it's such a simple problem to fix. And it's frustrating when I hear that all these people are having problems. It's like, just don't be a jerk. Just don't give the officer a reason to suspect that you're doing something wrong or there's something bad in the car. Just everybody remain calm. So,
I went to a high school, and these guys, these were seniors, and they were all going off to different colleges throughout the country. And we literally
mm-hmm.
did a mock traffic stop on how to act during a traffic stop. But they're going to be in other cities. They're going to be in other states. And we went through the entire thing of where to put your hands, what to say, how to act
mm-hmm.
so that when these kids go off and if they get pulled over, you know, they'll know how to behave. And it was eye-opening, you know, it was eye-opening. So hopefully that didn't
When you say eye-opening, did the kids really not know how to behave then?
Well, I just, you know, they started to talk about, we did several different scenarios. We did a scenario where we were acting like a jerk, and mm-hmm. they were acting like a jerk back, and this is what's going to happen. And then we were very nice, and then they were very nice. And, yeah, believe it or not, you know, it's just all about the interaction that they have with the officer. And I think it's the responsibility of the officer. And you're stopping somebody's movement. You're stopping them from going wherever they're going. Especially for a traffic violation, which in the big scheme of things isn't a gigantic issue, but you're still stopping them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's the officer's responsibility to set the tone on how the traffic stop is going to go. It just doesn't need to be aggressive. It doesn't need to be, you don't need to be a jerk. You need to get the information, mm-hmm. tell them what they did, and then, you know, based on what, you know, your judgment, write them a ticket or give them a warning. I just have never been a big ticket person. I speed mm-hmm. everywhere I go a lot, so I don't write speeding tickets. Like, I just, you know, and it's,
right.
and it's a horrible cycle to get these people in. You write them a ticket for something, and, you know, they can't afford it. Then they get their driver's license
mm-hmm.
suspended,
mm-hmm.
and then it's this gigantic cycle that they can't get
right.
out of. And it's sometimes not worth it when, you know, maybe they needed to pay their heat bill that month,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Yeah, that was exactly what happened to me. So, well, Officer Menina, thank you so much. You're doing an incredible job on behalf of Web Sleuth Radio and everybody at Web Sleuth. Thank you for taking the time to come and discuss Abby and Libby's case with us, because we're just we're thirsty for information to have somebody like you, as prestigious in law enforcement, to come on and take the time to explain as much as you possibly can. I can't thank you enough. So you know what that means? That means you're going to be a regular guest, whether you like it or not. So we'll just keep calling you.
Okay.
Okay?
Oh, I thank you guys.
Oh, go ahead.
I thank you guys for having me on, and I appreciate the work you guys are doing. And, you know, if you need anything, help with anything, don't hesitate to call me.
Oh, boy, we will call you. Thank you so much. And, everybody, don't forget the Menina Files. You can find them on iTunes and Google and a whole bunch of places. Just Google it. You'll have no problem finding that incredible podcast. Thank you, Officer Menina. We'll talk to you again very soon. You take care and be safe out there, all right?
All right. Thank you. You guys, too.
Take care now. Bye-bye. Okay. Miss Bessie, are you there? Hello, Miss Bessie. I do this all the time. I sing a song, and she finally comes out of hibernation. Bessie, are you there?
I
don't know where she
I'm
went.
I'm so sorry.
That's okay. I was starting to sing.
Yeah, I mute my phone, you know, while the speaker is speaking, and so then it takes a
mm-hmm.
moment for me to get back online.
That is
I've added,
okay.
I've added the link to the Menina Files to our section in the you know, podcast row. So
fantastic.
I have a link there as the Menina Files. So anyone who's interested can go to Podcast Row on Web Sleuth, and you'll find
under the M's. Yes, and that is something
under
that Bessie
M's.
Worked long and hard on to put together for everybody, so everybody can go there and just check out all of the really good true crime podcasts. It's Podcast Row. Go to websleuth.com, just scroll down the page, and you will be able to see it. It's good to have you back, Bessie. You're gone for a while. I'm glad you're back with us. And let's just go over Abby and Libby's case briefly here for a moment. I don't know. I was talking with one of our members in the chat room, and I don't know if he wants me to say his name or not, but he goes by Crime Talk, and he was saying that the face just doesn't match. And I kind of agree with him. I do. But, damn, this guy looks so good on paper. It's like he's got... It's got to be him or somebody exactly like him, Daniel Nations, 31. And if what they're saying is true about sleeping under bridges, well, there's another connection. It's just crazy. What do you think? What do you think about the case?
Well, I kind of disagree. And I'll say the
mm-hmm.
first thing, you know, when his name came out and they started posting pictures, well, naturally, the first thing I did, like everybody else, was try to compare him to that picture of that person who was on the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
I can see where there could be a possible resemblance. I see,
mm-hmm.
it's not a real clear resemblance, naturally,
right.
but of course, in the bridge photo, you know, he's he's got a hood or something on. He's kind of covered up with a jacket. But I wouldn't rule him out. I mean, in no way could I say, oh, no, that could never be the same guy. I think it's possible. But, you know, then I don't attest that my vision is the greatest.
Right.
But I have looked at it several times, and I'm like, yeah, I wouldn't rule it out. And then when you put it together with all the other facts that we know about him, I think Officer Menina said, I mean, if I were a detective, I'd be going, oh, yeah, you know, let's look into this one. This is intriguing here. It's something to be looked at again. Yeah.
Well, this has come to Web Sleuth, and I think a lot of people, Bessie, feel like you do on Web Sleuth, and I hope you are right. You just scroll down. You'll be able to see Abby and Libby's thread. It is under the found discussion forum, I believe, because we put it under the missing.
Main missing, and then within the main missing forum, there's located persons in discussion. And
that's where they're at.
And if you just look at most recent post or new post, or you know, or that little bar on the menu on the right that shows the most recent post, Abby and Libby are usually at the top or near the top because that thread has been so busy.
Something
I wanted to mention, and I think you said, might be wrong, that you're not aware that the Indianapolis police have ever contacted us for help? With this particular case.
Yeah, with this case. Oh, yeah. Tell us
about
that one time. That's right.
Well, there's a cold case from 1993, and it's in cold cases, and the victim is Carmen Van Huss, H-U-S-S, Van Huss. And Detective Will Carter had come to us a few years ago and asked us for help, and that was a very busy thread for a good while, but it has suddenly recently gone cold again, and I'm very sorry. But it's another open Indianapolis case from 1993, if anyone's interested.
The police came to us. I'm sorry, what was the name again?
The victim is Carmen Van Huss.
Okay. And I will put that up in the red scroll on the front of the page so you can just click on it and get right to that case. Yeah, we've had, it's getting better, don't you think, Bessie? We're getting more and more police officers and police departments contacting us. We've had them from all over the world contact us. So
yeah, it does.
Pretty amazing.
It does seem that way, that that they are police, you know, law enforcement is starting to really see us as a good source or resource to perhaps get information. So I hope that will continue.
I really think it will. Bessie, thank you so much for doing the heavy lifting. We'll see you next week, okay?
Okay.
And everybody, thank you for joining us on Web Sleuth Radio. I'm going to leave you with this incredibly creepy voice one more time, just on the off bazillionth chance that somebody recognizes this voice. This is from Libby's telephone, from her cell phone, recording the man following them. And just listen to the voice. He says, down the hill, if you recognize it, contact the Indianapolis Police Department. Here we go.
Down the hill. Down the hill. Down the hill. Down the hill.
That's it, everyone. Good night.